Welcome to episode 366 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. I'm Peter Anderson. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. I blinked my eyes a few times to see if that would help me to see. But there was nothing to see. He'd been there a minute ago and now he was gone, lost in the clouds. This was not an experience I ever thought I would have, watching a friend rise into the sky and disappear. But then I never thought I'd have a friend who would walk on water, calm a storm by just speaking to it, or bring the dead back to life either. Jesus was not an ordinary friend. Not an ordinary teacher, not an ordinary man. Jesus was, no, he is, the Messiah, the Son of God. I said it myself when asked, and he had praised me for it. So why had I turned my back on him when he needed me most? I am called Simon, son of Jonah, but you probably know me better by the name he gave me, Peter. I was born in Bethsaida, but now I live in Capernaum. Both cities are on the coast of the Sea of Galilee. In what seems like a lifetime ago, I had a quiet and simple life. I was happily married, and I was partners with James and John, the sons of Zebedee, in a profitable fishing business. My brother Andrew was a follower of John the Baptist. One day he heard John declare that Jesus was the Lamb of God. That same day he came to my house and he told me these very words, "We have found the Messiah." And Andrew brought me to Jesus. When I met him, I knew he was different. I knew there was something remarkable about him. And that's when he gave me that new name, Cephas, or Peter. That name means rock, and I was certainly unworthy of it. But Jesus saw me not as I was, but as I could be. Later, after a frustrating all-nighter at sea with no success, Jesus commanded us to cast our fishing nets into the deep water. I was tired and skeptical, but we did what he said. And no sooner had we let the nets down than we began to feel the strain of fish. The catch was so great that the nets began to break and our boats felt like they were going to sink. I remember what I said to him after that miracle. "Oh, Master, please leave. I am such a sinful man." His response? "There is nothing to fear. From now on, you will be fishing for men and women." My life changed that day. That was the day that I stopped working for myself and started following him. For 3.5 years, I was one of the 12 disciples who accompanied Jesus as he traveled throughout Galilee, preaching and teaching and healing the sick. Others would join us from time to time, but we were always with him. We were with him when he fed the multitudes. We were with him when he cast out demons. We were with him when he forgave the woman caught in adultery, when he shamed the hypocrites, and when he cried over Jerusalem. And after all of that, I betrayed him. Many people think that what Judas did was bad, but we were all guilty, and I was perhaps the guiltiest of them all. After all, besides James and John, no one knew him better than I did. We were the only ones there when Jesus raised the daughter of Jairus. And again, we were the only ones who witnessed the transfiguration on Mount Tabor, when Jesus talked with Moses and Elijah. And Jesus gave me and John the special task of preparing the final Passover meal. The Passover. The meal that some have started calling the Last Supper. That was when he warned me. He told me what I was going to do.
"Peter, this very night before the cock crows twice, you will have denied 3 times that you even know me."
I was so convinced that he was wrong. I boasted that I would never forsake him, even if everyone else did. I was so sure of myself. I had walked on water. Granted, I fell when I took my eyes off him, but I had taken several steps on top of the waves before I started to sink. I had often been a spokesman for my fellow disciples. People looked up to me. They respected me. I had always prided myself on my loyalty. I thought I was strong. Yet my betrayal started when Jesus asked us to go with him to the Garden of Gethsemane. He was clearly quite troubled, and he wanted us to watch while he prayed to his Father. James, John, and I were with him, And rather than pray with him or stay up to encourage him or even to watch, we fell asleep. 3 times he went away to pray, and 3 times he returned to find us sleeping. After that 3rd time, while he was still talking, men had come with torches and clubs to take Jesus away. They were dispatched to the garden by the chief priest, and they knew where to find him because Judas had told them. When they first arrived, my first instinct was to protect the master. I waved my sword about. I even cut off a man's ear. But when Jesus put that ear back on again, it was clear he did not approve. Everyone else ran, terrified. But I followed Jesus to the place they took him. And while they interrogated him, I waited in the courtyard. And that's when it started. The pointing, the whispering, the talking. I thought I would be able to handle it, but I couldn't. Jesus hadn't defended himself. He'd just gone with the men. So it didn't seem likely that he would defend me either. That's why when the accusation started, I panicked.
Wait a minute. I know you. You were with that Jesus. You're one of his followers. But he is. Look!
And I know him. He is one of his followers.
Yes, I've seen him. I've seen him.
No!
Catch him!
He's a liar! Arrest him!
What's going on here?
He's a friend of Jesus. A disciple.
Don't let him go.
And yes, all those accusations were true. They had me dead to rights. But all I could think to do was to deny their charges. No, I wasn't with him. No, I am not his follower. Jesus of Nazareth, I don't even know the man. I denied him. Just as he said I would. Just as I promised I never would. 3 times, I was so ashamed. So I ran. And I cried. And he died. And that was that. No chance to say sorry. No opportunity to make it right. Or so I thought. For 3 days later, some of the women in our group came running to us with the most extraordinary news. Jesus' tomb was empty. We didn't believe them at first. John and I went to check. His tomb was empty, as reported. But when Jesus came to see us later that day, then appeared here and there to us and to our friends, there was no doubt he was indeed alive. And even though I was amazed and excited and overwhelmed as any in our group, still there was that thing I needed to deal with, that thing I knew I had done, that thing for which I had yet to apologize and seek forgiveness, that thing that just sort of lingered there between us. I was afraid to bring it up. I was still ashamed and uncomfortable. So Jesus addressed it for me. We were out fishing one morning. Someone was cooking breakfast on the shore. When John realized it was Jesus, I leapt into the water and splashed my way to him. I wanted to deal with the thing. I really did. Maybe this was my chance. And then I didn't. And that's when he asked me the strangest question. Do you love me? Of course, I said. Then feed my sheep, he replied. It was not what I expected to hear. Feed my sheep? What did he mean? Would that somehow prove, again, my love for him? Then he repeated the question, do you love me? And again I said that I did. And again he said, feed my sheep. When it happened a 3rd time, when he asked and I answered and he told me to feed his sheep, I was truly puzzled. I answered once. Did he not believe me? I answered twice. Had I not been clear? I answered a 3rd time. And then I realized, a 3rd time, early in the morning. Like the 3rd time I had denied him in the morning before the cock crowed. That's what this was about. The chance I had been looking for to say 3 times that I was sorry. And the chance he had been looking for as well to say 3 times that he trusted me enough to put his sheep, his followers, into my hands. And that's why I could look up today after he said goodbye and rose into the sky, confident that all was right between us, look up and smile and wave in wonder, because now I am sure that when I see him again, as he promised I will, one day, there will be nothing but joy in that reunion.